the Omicron variant, just the latest in a string of concerning COVID variants that we've been confronted with since the pandemic began. News coming out recently that several cases have popped up in Southern California. But what does that mean to us? And how worried should we be? We ask an expert. A historic moment for our L.A. County Board of Supervisors. It's now all women. We talked to the most recently elected member of the board, Supervisor Holly Mitchell, about what it's like to work with this precedent-setting group. And speaking of women in politics, we go back to 1953 when Roz Wyman became the youngest L.A. City Council member elected at the age of 22. She was only the second woman to ever serve on the council. We talk about that and what her connection is to the L.A. Dodgers. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. Just when we were adjusting to the Delta variant comes a new one, Omicron. Originally found in South Africa, it's made its way to Southern California. We have a few documented cases here. And so what do we know about it? Joining us now is a regular here on In Depth, Dr. Matt Waxman. He's an emergency room doctor at Olive View Medical Center and a professor of emergency medical care at UCLA. And so good to see you, Matt. And okay, Omicron, we're getting down the Greek alphabet. Tell us what we know.
Well, Hal, we know a lot more this week than we knew last week. We know now that Omicron is the dominant strain in South Africa, where over 99% of the cases are Omicron. Here in the United States, we now have Omicron, including California. 19 states are affected. But the Delta strain is the dominant strain here in the U.S. What we know is that Omicron is probably more easily transmissible because it's become the dominant strain in places it's located. We know this week that we may have some decrease effectiveness in terms of our vaccines for Omicron, especially if you've only had two doses, and that's preliminary data. We know that with a third dose, especially of Pfizer, we may be protected against Omicron.
Okay, let's talk about that for just a second here, because as often happens with these fast developing stories, we are taping during the week. Things could change by the day this plays. But Pfizer came out with big news about Omicron and its effectiveness. And why don't you share some of that with us and help us understand what Pfizer is trying to help us understand?
So Pfizer's trying to help us understand is that if you've had the vaccine with the booster, do you make antibody against this new strain? And Omicron has about 37 changes in the spike protein, that part of the virus that actually binds to our cells. So what Pfizer wanted to figure out was if somebody's had the vaccine, do they make a robust immune response? And what they found this week was, in the test tube at least, that there was a decrease effectiveness of just a dose or two of the Pfizer vaccines against Omicron. But if you've had the third dose, that you may be fully protected against Omicron.
Now you said in the lab test, in the test tube, we haven't really found this out among real humans, right?
We really don't have enough data and enough actually transmission, as we say, in the wild to do those studies yet. Everybody is going to be looking at what happens to patients when Omicron becomes the dominant strain in more countries. Do they get hospitalized more? Do they need more oxygen? Are they actually sicker? That's the big question. And what we know from the data in South Africa, where Omicron's the dominant strain, thankfully, they're actually not seeing more hospitalizations, not seeing more deaths and more oxygen usage in those patients that get sick.
And that's good news to hear so far. One of the things we keep hearing, though, repeatedly about this particular strain is that it may be more easily transmissible. Okay, so how do we know that? What does that mean to us? And does that sort of mean like it's more like a common cold as far as transmission, that it is like COVID-19 as far as transmission?
But we know that it's easily transmissible because in places like South Africa, where after Thanksgiving it was detected, it became the dominant strain very, very quickly. It outcompeted other strains such as Delta and Beta. We also know that in terms of the effectiveness of it to transmit, it's very, very effective at that. Whether or not it's like a common cold remains to be seen, but we are not seeing in South Africa where it's dominant, we're not seeing a large number of deaths at all.
And as you pointed out, and Dr. Fauci has pointed out, the Delta variant is still the one we have to be concerned about, right?
Absolutely. So in the United States, still, as of this week, 99% of the strains, according to the CDC, are Delta.
What do we know about the effectiveness as far as Delta? I mean, vaccines are vaccines. We keep learning more information. The library of information is growing on Delta. What do we now know about the vaccine's effectiveness against Delta?
We know so much about the vaccine's effectiveness against Delta. We know that the vaccines that are licensed in the United States are incredibly effective against Delta. They are effective against preventing hospitalizations. They are effective against preventing transmission. And in fact, when patients aren't vaccinated and the virus is replicating and replicating in them without any protection, that's how we get more of these mutations. And that's how we're going to get more strains in the future. So actually, one way of combating these strains is to vaccinate patients who are infected or could be infected with Delta.
So one of the things we hear a lot about is monoclonal antibodies. And so talk about that in relationship to Delta and Omicron.
So these monoclonal antibodies that we have were tailored for Delta itself. These monoclonal antibodies were antibodies that were taken out of patients, purified in the lab, and really are in response to Delta. So they're really primed, almost like a piece of Lego, to fit into Delta. We know that there's three licensed monoclonal antibodies in the United States. It looks like the Regeneron product is not as effective against Omicron, at least in the lab. We know for the Glaxo product, they reported this week that it is extremely effective against Omicron. We're learning a lot more against the monoclonal antibodies. This said, both the vaccine manufacturers and the manufacturer of the monoclonals are working very, very hard to tweak their production, which can happen very quickly, to be effective against Omicron.
You know, sometimes words get into our lexicon that we start to use and take for granted, but there may be people out there that don't even know what monoclonal antibodies are and what monoclonal means.
Yeah, monoclonal means is that a B cell, which is a type of white blood cell, which is a response to infection in your body, it sees an infection that it's seen before or it's primed to, and it starts releasing a bunch of proteins. And all these proteins are going to surround and bind to that infection, in this case, SARS-CoV-2. And one of the things these proteins that bind to the virus do is it tags it for destruction. So it's one half of our immune system.
So short answer here. As of right now, this minute, this hour, the bottom line on Omicron is what?
The bottom line is it's not as bad as we thought it would be. Right now, the data that we have is that it's not filling up hospitals in South Africa, and a lot of the cases that they're finding are so-called incidental, that they are patients that are getting tested, they're positive, but they are not very, very sick.
All right. Dr. Matt Waxman, as always, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us again. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, for the first time in its history, the L.A. County Board of Supervisors is composed of all women. We'll talk to the supervisor whose election created that historic quintet. That's coming up next. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. The L.A. Board of Supervisors, the L.A. County Board of Supervisors, has a distinction it's never had before with the election of Supervisor Holly Mitchell. Because of that, last year, we now have an all-female Board of Supervisors for the first time in history. Now, Mitchell's district, the second district, ranges all the way from South L.A. down through Culver City, through Inglewood and Hawthorne, and then inland to Linwood, Compton and Carson. And it's really good to have Supervisor Mitchell join us. First time you and I have had a chance to talk to each other. I got to tell you, I want to share a little history. I want to brag a little bit. Coming up on January 2nd, that'll mark my 40th year in television here in Los Angeles. And back then, 40 years ago, the County Board of Supervisors was made up of Dean Dana, Pete Shabaram, Ed Edelman, Mike Antonovich, Kenny Hahn, all men. And in November 2020, when you were elected to the board, for the first time, the board became all women. It took four decades. Time has certainly changed, hasn't it?
Hal, it certainly has. And thank you so much for having me on. You know, I'm a third generation native Angeleno. So I have to tell you a little secret. When I think about the LA County Board of Supervisors, it's the same list of men that you just referenced that I kind of automatically default to in my own mind. I think most of my life, the board looked like that picture you just showed. So we've come a long way, baby, as the Virginia Slims commercial used to claim.
Hey, that's how they used to claim it, right. You know, it is quite a different look. But how is it politically? What does that political look feel like, look like? And what was it like to be part of that historic moment?
Well, I have to tell you, first of all, I have the utmost respect for the four amazing policymakers I have the honor of serving with. I said, quite frankly, during the campaign, when people began to connect the dots and thought, oh, if you're elected, it would be, you know, five women. What does that mean? I said, well, you know, the life experience, the expertise that all of us, quite frankly, bring to the board, the one common denominator is we're female. When you think about the diversity of the board, the diversity of our lens, our ordinary life experiences, our professional experiences, you have former labor secretary, members of Congress, legislators, attorneys, you know, long-term policy wonks and staffers. We come from every corner and every walk of life that LA County represents. And I think that's a great thing. I think we're a true reflection of the people who make up LA County.
And you made another piece of history. You're now the chairwoman of the board, which is the first time we've had a woman of color as a person of chair, on the chair, the head of the chair.
I'm going to assume.
Or was it Yvonne Brathwaite Burke?
I'm going to assume Yvonne Brathwaite Burke may have been the first woman of color, first black woman to have chaired it as the chair rotates. But there's an amazing video that the executive office produced called The First to Five that really chronicles the history of the board. And they interviewed the first two women who served, who talk about those tough times as being the first and only women serving on the Board of Supervisors.
You know, it's amazing that we're looking at a little video of that right now. And when we talk about the history of this board, we're also talking about the history of Los Angeles County and the policies that have been made and the things that have been done and the policies that you make as a team of board members. Do you find, because you've had history in state politics and in other avenues of politics, you've dealt with men, you've dealt with women. Do you find, since we're looking at sort of gender conversation here, that it's easier, harder, or just exactly the same when you're dealing with women colleagues?
You know, it's a very interesting question. And I've been a woman leader of organizations, nonprofit organizations. I've worked, you know, in settings that were women-led, women-dominated, and not. And I think, you know, women lead differently. The Center for the American Woman in Politics at Rutgers University really looks at, from a research perspective, elected bodies where women are the majority. And they talk about the kinds of policies that come out of those bodies, that they tend to be more oriented toward working families and focused on the needs of families and childcare and healthcare services. And so I think that all of us are seasoned policymakers. Many of my fellow board members have served in elected office decades longer than I have. So we are policymakers. We are elected officials, but we also bring that lens of really focusing on the true work of the county, which are the safety net programs, the kind of services that help families stay whole. And I think that's a great thing. And we all have unique experiences that we bring to the table to make LA County the place we all want to raise our children in so they can thrive and where we can grow old with dignity.
Some issues are bigger than others. Some are more challenging than others. And some are a little more smelly than others. And you've had to deal with one we sort of call the big stench down there in the South Bay. Talk about that for a minute. How tough has that one been?
It's been tough, but it's situations like that that, in my humble opinion, government is designed for, where government can come in with our fundamental role, which is to protect the residents of the Carson community, where we have partnered with the city of Compton and other governmental entities to really, A, identify the source of the problem and to quickly figure out how we resolve it, but also how we protect the health and safety of the residents as well as the small business people in that community. It has taken far too long. I certainly get that, but it's been a real challenge in pulling together multiple levels of government to problem solve, fix it, and keep people whole and safe and healthy in the process. And so the county has spent millions of dollars in terms of providing access to hotel rooms for people who live in very close proximity to the core of the smell, air purifiers distributed in the thousands. And so, you know, that's what government does. We came up with an immediate solution to keep people safe, while we go through the process of unpacking the source of the stench in the chemical and how we stop it and prevent it from happening again.
Okay, I know you're very good at short sound bites. So 10 seconds, I want to know what you want to tell young women out there about aspiring to politics.
Dream big and follow your heart. You know, I got into politics because of policy making and recognizing what lack of investment in my community meant. I was a kid in the 70s when Prop 13 passed and didn't understand why my parks were closing and my library's hours were reduced until I learned about Proposition 13 and it happened. So if you are committed to your community and you want to affect change, public policy and elected office is the way to go.
Okay, remember those words. Dream big, follow your heart. Holly Mitchell, thanks so much for joining us. Good to talk with you. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you, Hal.
All right, take care. Coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, we're going to meet another groundbreaking woman politician. She'll be joining us right after this break. The woman who had a big connection to bringing the Los Angeles Dodgers here to Los Angeles. You're going to want to hear all about this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. When we're talking about female politicians in Los Angeles, the conversation really has to include a mention of Rosalind Wyman. Roz Wyman was the youngest elected city council member back in the 1950s and only the second woman to join that board. The first was appointed. We've been looking forward to talking to you, Roz. Roz Wyman joining us right now. And just to sort of educate everybody, how young are you these days?
Well, I hit 91. How about that?
That's wonderful, Roz. And it's so good to talk to you. Given that you started at the age of 22, I got to ask you, what was that like? And you just heard Holly, another history maker. Thoughts?
Well, I'm going to try to go as fast as I can, but I have to say something about Holly. First place, the Board of Supervisors is a great place for Holly. Holly's a real politician and a real person to get things done. She puts a motion in and it means something. The night that Holly was elected, I was so excited because obviously it had been five women on the board. When I was elected at my time, there was a five members of the board and 14 members of men on the city council. So every time I had to go someplace social, it was one woman, 14 councilmen, and five members of the Board of Supervisors. The night Holly got elected, I called Sheila Kuehl, who was also a member of the board, and I said, "We got to celebrate. First place, you got a great person who really knows politics. And secondly, we ought to have a big event because five women is really something."
You know, you were very instrumental in something still very important today, and that's the Los Angeles Dodgers. A lot of young people wouldn't know your role in that. Can you tell us a little history?
Well, the Dodgers are obviously very important to Los Angeles. When I got elected, Los Angeles was considered a second-rate city. The best cities at that time were New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston, and Cleveland. Anybody from Cleveland, I apologize. But anyway, I decided that we had to do something to make some changes around our city. And if we didn't have some pro sports, we will never be a first-rate city. So that was one of my goals, obviously, is to get major league sports. I must say, I never dreamed when I went after the sports that we'd have the Brooklyn Dodgers. They were considered the finest sports team in America at that time, and they weren't going to leave Brooklyn. And everybody in Brooklyn just absolutely devastated. And in fact, I can go to a party now. They've been here since 1958. And I go to a party and somebody will say, "That woman is the lady who took the Brooklyn Dodgers," and they still are mad. So, but it's a long, complicated story. But
what a wonderful legacy, though. I mean, what a wonderful legacy. The decades later, people are still saying that's the woman that brought the Dodgers from Brooklyn. You know, just recently, a plaque was dedicated to you at the L.A. Coliseum. What was that about?
Well, that was very nice. I was appointed that the first elected person from the city of LA to be on the Coliseum Commission. And I had served over a number of years, and they honor people. They have what they call a court of honor. And I was very pleased that I was nominated for this honor by Janice Hahn, a member of the Board of Supervisors, who represents the Hahn. No, she doesn't represent, she represents herself. But the Hahn family's gift to Los Angeles with a mayor and all the things. And Janice was a member of not only the City Council of LA, but she also was a congresswoman, and then to the Board of Supervisors. But if you take all the Hahns and Brother Hahn now as a judge, their gift to the city and county of Los Angeles is phenomenal. And nobody can duplicate what the Hahn family has done. Now, getting the Dodgers, though, was very important for Los Angeles. We took tests, we did polls, and it showed that people who wanted to come to Los Angeles to work, one of the big questions that was asked, what do you got in sports and what have you got in the arts? And I've spent a lot of time on the arts. The wonderful LA Philharmonic has grown, and now not only is it great, it is now considered the best orchestra, not only in America, but in the whole world.
You know, Roz, really, I got to tell you, you've had such an impact on this city, and it's such a delight to talk to you. I just want to take a few seconds, just a few seconds, and let you talk to the young people today out there. You were a young woman in the 1950s, 1953, 22. You broke the barriers. You're a pioneer. Tell young women, young girls even today, your advice to them about getting into politics.
Well, you have to want to do it. I started in school getting elected to many offices. And in fact, I always said what elected me to the city council was soap. And everybody said, what do you mean? And I said, well, my mother and dad were pharmacists and they got soap donated to my campaign. So we packaged it and we handed it out door to door so we could clean up the city of Los Angeles.
I remember the story. It was soap, and you wrapped it up, and you said, let's clean up the city. And unfortunately, we've got to clean up the show right now because we're running out of time. Roz Wyman, I can't even tell you what a treat it is to have a chance, even just a few minutes, to talk to you. Thank you so much. We'll be back in just a moment here on Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks for joining us, everybody. That's it for Fox 11 News In Depth for this week. We'll see you next week. Have a great week, everybody. See you next time.